not since Vivian had walked out the door. Emily, I thought to myself, would never do something like that. And as I slid into the car, I found myself thinking about how naturally beautiful Emily was. No makeup masking skin with a slightly olive undertone. No expensive highlights or collagen fillers. She was more beautiful now, I thought to myself, than she'd been when we'd dated. Emily, I realized, had sounded happy to hear from me, and I couldn't deny that it made me feel better. People-pleasing is best when it happens easily, after all, and where I constantly felt like I was struggling to please Vivian, it seemed that with Emily, all I had to do was be me, and that was more than enough. And yet, as much of a distraction as Emily had been, I hadn't been lying to Marge or Liz. As an old friend, and an attractive one at that, it was understandable that I'd enjoyed spending time with Emily, and it probably made sense that I'd called her. I felt comfortable with her, just as I always had. What it didn't mean was that I was ready or even interested in a relationship. After all, healthy relationships required two well-adjusted people, and at the present time I wasn't enough for her. I said as much to Marge before I left for home, but she just shook her head. "That's Vivian's voice you're hearing in your head," she said to me. "If you saw yourself the way everyone else does, you'd know what a catch you really are." I arrived at the house at 6:30 and hesitated at the door, wondering if I should knock. It was ridiculous, of course, and the fact I felt that way led to a growing sense of frustration, one that was directed more at myself than at Vivian. Why did I still care so much about what she thought? Habit, I silently heard myself answer, and I knew that habits could take a long time to break. I opened the door and stepped inside, but there was no sign of London or Vivian. I heard sounds coming from upstairs and I moved toward the steps when Vivian rounded into view, holding a glass of wine. She beckoned to me, and I followed her into the kitchen. Glancing around, I noticed pans and plates piled in the sink, and neither the stove nor the counters had been wiped. There was half a glass of milk and a placemat that still sat on the table, and I knew in that moment that she had no intention of cleaning the kitchen before she left. I felt as though I no longer knew her, if I ever did. "London's upstairs in the bath," she said without preamble. I told her that I'd come and get her in a few minutes because we needed to talk to her, but I thought we should get on the same page first.
"Didn't we already cover this on Friday?"
"Yes, but I wanted to make sure you remembered." Her comment felt like an insult.
"I remember."
"Good," she said. "I also think it'll be easier for London if I take the lead."
"Because you don't want her to know about Walter, right?"
"This is your show," I said. "What's that supposed to mean?"
"Just what I said. You're making all the decisions. You've yet to ask what I might want."
"Why are you in such a cranky mood?" Was she serious?
"Why didn't you have London call me back last night?"
"Because she fell asleep. Not 10 minutes after you called, she was sound asleep on the couch. What was I supposed to do, wake her up? You see her every day, I don't."
"That was your choice. You're the one who walked out."
Her eyes narrowed, and I thought I saw in them not simply anger, but hatred. She kept her voice steady. "I was hoping we'd be able to behave like adults tonight, but it seems pretty clear that you have different plans."
"You're trying to blame all this on me?"
"I just want you to hold yourself together while we talk to our daughter. The other option is to make it as painful as possible for her. Which would you prefer?"
"I would prefer not to be doing this at all. I would prefer you and I had an honest discussion about salvaging our marriage."
She turned away. "There's nothing to talk about. It's over. You should be receiving the settlement agreement this week."
"Settlement agreement?"
"I had my attorney put it together. It's pretty standard."
By standard, I'm sure it stipulated that London was living with her in Atlanta, and I felt my insides twist. All at once, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to lose my wife and daughter. I didn't want to lose everything, but I was nothing but a bystander, watching my life unravel in ways that seemed entirely beyond my control. I was exhausted, and when the nausea finally passed, my body felt as if it might dissolve. Let's just get this over with. London handled it better than I thought she would, but then again it was clear to me London was so exhausted that her attention seemed to wander. Add in her ruddy nose and I had the sense that what she really wanted was to go to sleep. As I'd expected, Vivian omitted much of the truth and kept the conversation so short that I found myself wondering why she deemed it so critical in the first place. By the end, I suspected London had no idea that anything was actually changing between Vivian and me. She was as used to Vivian traveling as I was. The only time she became upset was when it came time for Vivian to leave. Both she and Vivian were in tears as they hugged goodbye in the driveway, and London's sobs grew worse as Vivian finally pulled away. I carried her inside, my shirt growing damp in spots from her tears. Her bedroom smelled like a farm. In addition to cleaning the kitchen, I would have to clean the hamster cage. I gave London some additional cold medicine, put her in bed. She scooted closer to me and I slipped my arm around her.
I wish Mommy didn't have to leave, she said.
I know it's hard, I said. Did you have a good time this weekend? When she nodded, I went on. What did you do?
We went shopping and watched movies. We also went to the petting zoo. They had these cute goats that fall over onto their sides when they get scared. But I didn't scare them.
Did you go to the park? Or ride your bike?
No. I rode the carousel at the mall, though. I rode a unicorn.
That sounds fun. She nodded again.
Mommy said you have to remember to clean the hamster cage.
I know, I said. The cage is kind of smelly tonight.
Yeah, she said. Mommy didn't want to hold Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles because they were smelly, too. I think they need a bath.
I don't know if hamsters can take baths. I'll find out.
On the computer?
Yes.
The computer knows a lot of stuff, she said.
It sure does.
Hey, Daddy?
Yes?
Can we go bike riding?
How about we give it a couple of days until you feel better? You also have dance class, remember?
I remember,
she said without enthusiasm. Trying to keep her slightly improved mood from going downhill, I brightened.
Did you get to see Bodhi this weekend? He was in art class. I painted my vase.
With yellow flowers and pink mouses? Can I see it?
Mommy took it with her. She said it was really pretty.
I'm sure it was, I said, trying to hide my disappointment. I wish I could have seen it.
Do you want me to make you one? I can. And I think I can paint my mouses even better.
I'd love that, sweetie. I cleaned the hamster cage in the kitchen. Though I hadn't noticed earlier, I also had to straighten up the family room. Barbies and their accessories had been strewn about. Blankets needed to be folded and returned to the appropriate chest. And a half-eaten bowl of popcorn had to be emptied into the trash before being washed and dried. Remembering I still had dinners my mom had prepared, I moved a few Tupperware containers from the freezer to the refrigerator. I also unloaded the groceries I'd picked up with Liz and Marge earlier. Later, I crawled into bed and caught the scent of perfume, one that I knew Vivian had been wearing. It was light and flowery, but otherwise unknown to me. And I knew I'd never sleep. I stripped the bedding and put clean sheets on the bed. I wondered if she'd intended any message by leaving behind dirty sheets or a messy house. It might have been anger, but I didn't think so. My gut was telling me that she no longer cared how I might feel, because she no longer cared about me at all. Chapter 17. Moving Forward and Backward. When I was dating Emily, before I did something stupid, we spent the first week of July in Atlantic Beach, North Carolina. With two other couples, we'd rented a house close enough to the water that we could hear the waves breaking in unrelenting rhythm. Though we'd split the rent three ways, it was still a stretch for all of us, so we'd brought coolers packed with food we'd purchased at the grocery store. We planned to cook instead of going out to restaurants, and as the sun started to go down, we'd fire up the grill and start our feast. In the evenings, we'd drink beer on the porch to the sound of the radio. And I can remember thinking that it was the first of many such vacations Emily and I would end up taking together. The 4th of July was particularly special. Emily and I woke before the others, walking the beach as the sun began to rise. By the time everyone got out of bed, we'd set up our spot on the beach, complete with a steamer I'd rented to cook the scallops and shrimp that had been unloaded at the docks only a few hours earlier. We supplemented the seafood with corn on the cob and potato salad, and set up an inexpensive volleyball net. When our friends finally joined us, we spent the rest of the day in the sun, kicking back, wading in the surf, and coating ourselves with sunscreen. There was a carnival in town that week, set up in the main traffic circle near the beach, about a quarter mile from where we were staying. It was one of those traveling carnivals with rickety rides, overpriced tickets, and games that were almost impossible to win. There was, however, a Ferris wheel, and half an hour before the fireworks were supposed to start, Emily and I ditched the group and climbed aboard the ride. I figured we'd have plenty of time to rejoin our friends afterward, but as fate would have it, the ride broke down just as Emily and I reached the apex. While stalled at the top, I could see workers tinkering with either the engine or the generator. Later I saw someone race off, only to return carrying a large and obviously heavy toolbox. The ride operator shouted up to us that we'd have the ride working again shortly, but warned us not to rock the carts. Though the day had been sweltering, the wind was gusting, and I slipped my arm around Emily as she leaned into me. She wasn't frightened, nor was I. Even if the engine was fried, I was sure there was some sort of manual hand crank they could use to eventually unload everyone. From our vantage point in the sky, we watched people as they moved among the carnival booths and stared at the carpet of house and streetlights that seemed to stretch for miles. In time, I heard the familiar thwump of a firework being launched from a barge offshore, just before sparkling fingers of gold and green and red expanded across the sky. "Wow," Emily breathed, something she repeated throughout the hour and a half we remained stuck on the Ferris wheel. The wind was pushing the scent of gunpowder down the beach, and as I pulled Emily closer, I remember thinking that I would propose to Emily before the year was up. It was around that time that our friends finally spotted us. They were on the beach, people in miniature, and when they figured out that we were stuck, they began to whoop and point. One of the girls shouted up to us that if we planned on spending the night up there, we should probably order a pizza. Emily giggled before growing quiet.
"I'm going to pretend that you paid the workers down there to stall the Ferris wheel on purpose," she finally said.
"Why?"
"Because," she said, "for as long as I live, I don't think another 4th of July will ever measure up to this one."
On Monday morning, London woke with a red nose and continuing sniffles. Though she wasn't coughing, I debated whether to send her to school, but when I suggested as much, she began to fuss.
"The teacher is bringing in her goldfish today, and I get to feed him. Plus, it's coloring day."
I wasn't sure what coloring day entailed, but it was obviously a big deal to her. I gave her some cold medicine at breakfast, and she skipped off to class. I noticed when dropping London off that the teacher had a cold, too, which made me feel better about my decision. On my way back to the car, I caught myself wondering what Vivian was doing, and immediately shoved the thought away. Who cares? I reminded myself. But more important, I had a commercial to film later that week and another client I needed to impress. At the office, I was swamped with work. I confirmed everything I needed to film Taglieri's third commercial on Friday. I touched base with the tech guy for the plastic surgeon, and even managed to meet with an animal trainer, who claimed to have just the dog I needed to film the fourth commercial for Taglieri. We set a date for filming on Thursday of the following week. Which meant, fortunately, that I didn't have time to think about Vivian much at all. The settlement agreement was delivered via FedEx on Tuesday afternoon. It also came via email, but I couldn't bring myself to read either version. Instead, I called Joey Taglieri and asked if he would look it over. We agreed to meet at an Italian restaurant not far from his office the following day. I found him at a booth in the corner, the table topped with a red and white checkered tablecloth and a manila folder lying on a pad of yellow legal paper. He was drinking a glass of mineral water, and when I sat, he slid a piece of paper toward me, along with a pen. "Before we get into this, you need to sign a retainer agreement. I told you that I don't do family law anymore, but I can make an exception for you. I can also recommend some attorneys, including the guy who handled my second divorce, but I'm not sure how much they'll be able to help you for reasons I'll get to in a moment. The point is, no matter who you choose, everything you tell me will be covered by attorney-client privilege, even if you ultimately decide to work with someone else." I signed a retainer agreement and slid it back to him. Satisfied, he leaned back. "You want to tell me what happened?" I told the same story I had to Marge and Liz and my parents and Emily. By then, I felt as though I'd told the story 100 times. Taglieri jotted notes along the way. When I finished, he leaned back and said, "All right, I think I got it. I also reviewed the document, and I guess the first thing that you should know is that it looks like she intends to file for divorce in Georgia, not North Carolina."
"Why would she do that?"
"Georgia and North Carolina have different laws. In North Carolina, a couple has to be legally separated for a year before divorce can be granted. That doesn't mean you have to live in separate places, but both of you have to understand that you're separated. After the year is up, one of you files for divorce. The other side then has 30 days to file an answer, but that can be sped up a bit, at which point you get on the court calendar. When your time comes, divorce is granted.
In Georgia, there is no separated for a year requirement. There is, however, a residency requirement. Vivian can't file for divorce until she's been a resident of the state for 6 months. But after that, it can be granted in 30 days, assuming everything has been worked out between the two of you. In essence, because she's been living in Atlanta since September 8th, or maybe even before that, she'll be able to obtain a divorce next March or April, instead of next year around this time. In other words, she cut 6 months off the process. There are a couple of other differences concerning fault and no fault that I doubt will pertain to you. I'm guessing she'll file no fault, which essentially means the marriage is broken. So she's in a rush to dump me, huh? No comment, he said with a grimace. Anyway, that's one of the reasons I've decided to offer my services if you want them. I passed the bar in Georgia as well as North Carolina. Go Bulldogs! While the attorneys I used for my divorce haven't. In other words, it's either work with me or get an attorney in Georgia. Also, I made some calls this morning. Apparently Vivian's attorney is a real piece of work. I've never dealt with her, but she has the reputation of being a bully who likes to wear down the other side until they just throw in the towel. She's also very selective when it comes to clients, so my guess is Spanaman pulled some strings to get her to agree to represent your wife. What do I do? I have no idea where to start. Just what you're doing right now. You've retained legal counsel. And trust me, nobody knows what to do in the beginning unless they've been through it before. Long story short, in Georgia, there are documents that will have to be filed, everything from disclosure statements, marital settlement agreements, to an affidavit regarding custody. Her attorney will probably press to have everything ready by the 6 month mark, so there's going to be a lot of back and forth between counsel.
What about the settlement agreement she sent?
That's essentially a contract between the two of you. It covers alimony and property division, things like that.
What about London?
That's where it can get tricky. The courts retain the right to make decisions regarding custody, visitation, and child support. Now, the two of you can come to an agreement and the court will take that into account, but they're not bound by it. If it's reasonable, though, the court will usually go along with what the two of you decide. Because London is so young, she won't have much of a say at all. That's probably for the best.
I suspected he'd have to go over all of this again.
What did Vivian want?
Taglieri reached into the folder and pulled out the agreement. He began to flip through the pages.
As far as property division goes, for the most part she wants half. That's half the equity in the house, half the money in your banking and investment accounts, half of your retirement. She wants the SUV and half of the value of the contents of the house in cash. She also wants an additional chunk of change, which I'm guessing is half the total you invested in your business.
I suddenly felt as though I'd been donating blood for a week. Is that all?
Well, there's also alimony.
Alimony?
She earns more than I do right now, and she's dating a billionaire. I'm not saying she'll get it. I suspect she'll use it, along with the rest of the proposed property division, as leverage to get what she really wants.
London.
Yeah, he said. London. After my meeting with Taglieri, there was no time to return to the office. Instead, I drove to the school and got there early. I was at the front of the car line. I was looking over the separation agreement to crowd out all other thoughts when I heard a tapping on my window. Emily. She was wearing tight-fitted jeans with tears at the knees, along with a form-fitting top, and the sight of her made something lift inside me. Opening the door, I stepped out into the sunlight.
Hey there, I said. How are you?
I feel like I'm supposed to ask you that question. I've been thinking about you the last few days, and wondering how Sunday night went.
It went as well as something like that could, I guess. Vivian did most of the talking.
How's London doing?
She seems all right. Other than the fact that she's still getting over a cold.
Bodie, too. He just came down with it yesterday. I think more than half the class is sick right now. It's like a leper colony in there.
She seemed to study me for a moment.
Other than that, how are you holding up?
So-so, I admitted. I had to meet with an attorney today.
Oh, yuck, she said. I hated that part of it.
It wasn't a lot of fun, I said. It still feels like a dream. Like it's not really happening. Even though I know that it is. She looked straight at me, and as she held me in her sights, I was struck by the length of her eyelashes. Had they always been that long? I found myself struggling to remember.
Did you have your questions answered? She asked.
I wasn't even sure what questions to ask. That's what I was looking over in the car. Vivian sent a proposed separation agreement.
I'm not a lawyer, but if you have questions, you can call. I might not be able to answer all of them, of course.
I appreciate that, I said. I could see more cars pulling into line, a steady flow now. As far as I could tell, I was the only male in the pickup line. As I faced Emily, I suddenly heard Vivian's voice in my head.
Rumors.
And wondered if any of the mothers in the car line were watching us. Automatically, I took a slight step backward and slipped my hand into my pocket.
Did David leave for Australia?
She nodded.
Yesterday evening.
Was Bodhi upset?
Very. And then, of course, he wakes up sick as a dog.
And no word when he'll be back?
He said that he might be able to visit for a few days around Christmas.
That's good.
Sure, if he actually shows. He said the same thing last year. He's good at saying things. The problem is he's not always so good at follow-through.
I wondered where London would be this Christmas. I wonder where I would be.
Uh-oh, she said, tilting her head. I said something wrong, didn't I? You sort of drifted off there.
Sorry, I was just thinking about some of the things the lawyer said to me today. It looks like I might have to sell the house.
Oh no, really?
I'm not sure there's another option. It's not as though I have enough cash on hand to simply pay Vivian off. That was putting it mildly. If I gave in to all her demands, I'd be flat broke. Add in alimony and child support, and I wasn't even sure whether I could afford a two-bedroom apartment.
It'll all work out, she said. I know it's sometimes hard to believe, but it will.
I hope so. Right now, I just want to escape, you know?
You need a break from all this, she said, putting her hands on her hips. Why don't you guys come with Bodhi and me to the zoo in Ashboro this Saturday?
What about art class?
Please. She tossed the length of her thick hair over her shoulder. The kids can skip a day, and I know Bodhi would be thrilled. Has London ever been there?
No, I said. The directness of her offer was disarming, and I struggled to come up with a response. Was she asking me on a date? Or was this more about Bodhi in London? Thanks, I said. I'll let you know. By then, I could see teachers beginning to congregate near the door, students assembling by classroom. Emily noticed it, too.
I should get back to my car, she said. I don't want to hold up the line. It takes them long enough as it is. Good seeing you, Russ.
She waved. You too, Emily. I watched her walk away, trying to decipher the meaning of her invitation. But as she drew farther away, I felt the distinct urge to see more of her. I might not be ready, and it might be too soon. But I suddenly wanted that more than anything. Hey, Emily! I called out. She turned. What time are you thinking of leaving? When we got home, London was feeling a little better, so we went for a bike ride. I let her take the lead, following along as we traversed the streets of the neighborhood. Her biking ability was improving with every ride. I still had to caution her to move to the side of the road when a car approached, but kids on bicycles were a common sight in the neighborhood, and most drivers gave us a wide berth. We rode for an hour. Once home, she ate a snack and went upstairs to dress for dance. It seemed to take forever, and after a while I went up to check on her. I found her sitting on the bed, still wearing the same outfit she'd worn earlier. I took a seat beside her.
What's wrong, sweetie?
I don't want to go to dance tonight, she said. I'm sick.
Her cold hadn't adversely affected her bike ride, so I knew something else was going on. Namely that she didn't like dance class or Miss Hamshaw. And who could blame her?
If you're too tired or still feeling sick, you don't have to go.
Really?
Of course not.
Mommy might get mad.
Your mom left us, I thought. But I didn't say that. I'll talk to her. If you're sick, you're sick. But is there something else going on?
No.
Because if there is, you can tell me. When she added nothing else, I put my arm around her. Do you like going to dance?
It's important, she said,
as if reciting a sacred rule.
Mommy used to dance.
That's not what I asked. I asked if you like it.
I don't want to be a tree.
I frowned. Honey, can you tell me a little more about what's going on?
There's two groups in my class. One group is going away to dance at the competition. They're the good dancers. I'm in the other group. We have to dance too, but only for our parents. And I have to be a tree in the dance we're doing.
Oh, I said. And that's bad?
Yes, it's bad. I'm just supposed to move my arms when the leaves grow and fall.
Can you show me? With a sigh, she got up from the bed. She made a circle with her arms above her head, her fingertips touching. Then, separating her arms, she wiggled her fingers as she lowered her hands to her side. When she finished, she took a seat beside me on the bed again. I wasn't quite sure what to say. If it makes you feel any better, you were a very good tree, I finally offered.
It's for the bad dancers, Daddy, because I'm not good enough to play the frog or the butterfly or the swan or the fish.
I tried to imagine what those animals would be doing and how the dance would unfold, but what was the point? I figured I'd see it soon enough. How many other girls are trees?
Just me and Alexandra. I wanted to be the butterfly, and I practiced really hard, and I know all the moves. But Miss Hamshaw said that Molly gets to be the butterfly.
In the world of a 5-year-old, I supposed this was a very big deal. When is the show?
I don't know. She told us, but I forgot.
I made a note to check with Miss Hamshaw, before or after class, obviously, so I didn't offend or disrupt her. Do you want to go to the zoo this weekend? With me and Bodie and Miss Emily?
What?
The zoo. Miss Emily and Bodie are going. She invited us, but I don't want to go if you'd rather not.
A real zoo?
With lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. She furrowed her little brow.
Why did you say, oh, my?
She finally asked.
It's from a movie called The Wizard of Oz. Have I seen it?
No, I said.
What's it about?
It's about a girl named Dorothy. Her house gets picked up by a tornado and she lands in a place called Oz. She meets a lion and a tin man and a scarecrow, and they try to find the wizard so she can go back home.
Is there a bear and a tiger in the movie, too?
Not that I can recall.
Then why does the girl say it?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe because she was afraid she might run into them.
I'm not afraid of bears, but tigers are scary. They can be really mean.
Yeah?
I learned that when I watched The Jungle Book.
Ah, I said.
Is Mommy going to come to the zoo, too?
No, I said. She's working. She seemed to consider that.
Okay, she said. Since Bodie's going, we can go, too.
When Vivian FaceTimed later that evening, I noticed she was dressed as though she were about to go out to dinner, no doubt with Spannerman. I said nothing to her about it, but as she visited with London, the thought stewed in the back of my mind. Eventually, London wandered back to me, holding out the phone.
Mommy needs to talk to you.
Okay, sweetie, I said, taking it. I waited until she was gone before raising the screen. What's up? I asked.
I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be out of town this weekend and it might be hard to reach me.
Every part of me wanted the details, but I forced myself not to ask. Okay. She had apparently expected me to press for more information, as my single-word answer seemed to throw her off.
All right, she went on after an awkward pause. Anyway, I'll definitely be in Charlotte to see her next weekend, and I'd like to stay in the house again.
Without me, I said. I tried hard not to appear wounded.
I'm thinking about London here, so yes, without you. And of course, her birthday is 2 weekends after that, and I'd like to do the same thing. Stay in the house, I mean. Her birthday's on a Friday, but I want to put together a birthday party with her friends on Saturday. You should obviously come to her party, but after that, it would probably be best if you'd let us have the rest of the weekend to ourselves.
It's her birthday weekend, I protested. I'd like to spend time with her, too.
You're with her all the time, Ross, she said, raising her chin. She's in school and at her activities. You might think I get a lot of downtime with her, but I don't.
She gave an annoyed sigh.
You get to see her every night. You get to read to her. You get to see her every single morning. I don't.
Because you left, I said, enunciating slowly. Because you moved to Atlanta.
So you'd keep me from seeing my daughter? What kind of father are you? And on that subject, you shouldn't have let her miss dance class today.
She has a cold, I said. She was tired.
How is she supposed to improve if you keep letting her miss class?
The accusatory tone made my back stiffen. This is the first one she missed. It's not the end of the world. Besides, I don't think she even likes dance class.
You're missing the point, Vivian said, narrowing her eyes at me. If she wants a bigger role the next time they have a show, she can't miss classes. You're setting her up to be disappointed again.
And my point was, I don't think she'll care since she doesn't like dance in the first place. I could see her chest rise and fall, a flush creeping up past the neckline of her black cocktail dress.
Why are you doing this?
What am I doing now?
What you always do, finding fault, trying to pick a fight.
Why is it that when I tell you what I think or offer an opinion that's different from yours, you accuse me of trying to pick a fight?
Oh, for God's sake! I'm just so sick and tired of your crap, I can't even tell you.
With that, she disconnected the call. It bothered me more than it should have, but I noted with grim satisfaction that it bothered me less than it would have had we still been together. In fact, it bothered me less than it would have yesterday. Perhaps that was progress. At work for the next 2 days, I hopped from one project to the next, just like earlier in the week. I touched base with the patients that the plastic surgeon had recommended, and scheduled times on October 6th to get them on camera. That was going to be a long day. On Friday, I filmed the third commercial, making sure to place the camera below desk level so we could shoot the young actress from below. This way her age was emphasized to comic effect. The takes were so good that even members of the camera crew laughed. Perfect. That evening, I brought London to Dan's class as usual. Despite a clear lack of enthusiasm, she'd come downstairs dressed in her outfit and reminded me that we shouldn't be late. I didn't ask again whether it was something she wanted to do. I'm sure that Vivian had rebuked London just as she had me, and I had no desire to put London in an awkward position. I, more than anyone, knew how guilty Vivian could make someone feel. Seeing her sitting on the couch in the family room with her shoulders slightly caved in, I took a seat beside her. "What would you like to do after dance?" I asked.
"I don't know," she mumbled.
"Because I was thinking that maybe, just maybe, you and I could..." I stopped. A couple of seconds passed before she looked over at me.
"What could we do?"
"It's nothing," I said. "Never mind."
"What is it?"
"Well, the thing is, you might not want to do it." I pretended to lose interest.
"Tell me,"
she pressed. I forced out a long exhale. "I was thinking that since Mommy isn't here, maybe you and I could have a date night." London knew all about our date nights, even if she wasn't aware of all that transpired between Vivian and me. Her expression was one of wonder.
"A date night? Just you and me?"
"That's what I was thinking. After dance, we can get dressed up and cook dinner together, and then after that, we could either color or do some finger painting or maybe even watch a movie. But only if you want to," I said.
"I want to."
"You do, huh? What do you want to eat?" She brought a finger to her chin.
"I think I want chicken," she said,
and I nodded. "That sounds delicious. That's just what I wanted to."
"But I don't want to finger paint. It might get on my dress."
"How about coloring? I'm not very good, but I can try."
She beamed. "It's okay that you're not very good, Daddy. You can practice."
That sounds like a great idea. For the first time since I'd started ferrying London to and from her activities, she was in a good mood on the way to dance, though the class had nothing to do with it. Instead, I listened to a constant stream of ideas about what she could wear that evening. She debated which dress to wear and whether to pair it with a sparkly hair clip or bow, and what shoes would match best. Once inside, Miss Hamshaw motioned for her to proceed to the floor, but she suddenly turned around and ran back to envelop me in a hug before dashing to the door. Miss Hamshaw evinced no reaction, which I suppose was as much as she could offer in the way of kindness. While London was in class, I ran to the grocery store and picked up the makings for dinner. Knowing that we had an early morning the following day, we would meet at Emily's at 8, I opted for a rotisserie chicken from the deli, canned corn, sliced pears, applesauce from a jar, and clear grape juice. If we started eating at 6:30, she could still be in bed close to her normal bedtime. What I hadn't factored in was that 5-year-olds can take a long time to get dressed for date nights with their dads. At home after class, London raced up the stairs and forbade me to help. I went to my closet and got dressed up as well, even donning a blazer. I prepared dinner, which took all of 5 minutes, and then set the table using our good china. Candles completed the picture once I poured the grape juice into wine glasses. Then I leaned against the counter to wait. I eventually moved to the table and sat. After that, I wandered to the family room and turned on ESPN. Every now and then, I would walk to the stairs and call up to her. She would insist that I stay downstairs, that she was still getting ready. When she finally descended the stairs, I felt a prick of tears behind my eyes. She'd chosen a blue skirt along with a blue and white checkered top, white stockings and shoes, and a matching blue hairband. The grace note was the imitation pearl necklace she'd put on. Whatever my reservations about Vivian's frequent shopping expeditions with our daughter, even London knew that she'd made an impression. "You look beautiful," I said, rising from the couch. I shut off the television.
Thank you, Daddy,
she said as she carefully approached the dining room table. The table looks really nice. Her attempt to be as adult-like as possible struck me as almost unbearably adorable. I appreciate that, sweetie. Would you like to eat?
Yes, please.
I went around the table and pulled out her chair. When she was seated, she reached for her glass of grape juice and took a sip.
This is very tasty, she said.
I served and brought the plates to the table. London carefully spread her napkin in her lap, and I did the same. How was school today? I asked.
It was fun, she said. Bodhi said he wants to see the lions tomorrow at the zoo.
I do, too. I like lions, but I hope they don't have any mean ones like Scar. I was referring, of course, to the villain in the movie The Lion King.
They won't have any lions like Scar, Daddy. He's just a cartoon.
Oh, I said. That's right.
You're silly.
I smiled as she daintily picked up her fork. I've heard that. After dinner, we colored. London happened to have a coloring book that featured zoo animals, and we spent an hour at the kitchen table creating animals that could only have existed in rainbow-filtered worlds. Though she'd only been in school for a few weeks, I noticed that her coloring had improved. She was able to stay inside the lines and had even taken to shading various parts of the pictures. Gone were the smears and squiggles of only a year ago. My little girl was slowly but surely growing up, which for some reason made my heart ache in places I didn't know even existed. Chapter 18. It's Not a Date. A month after I graduated from college, I attended the wedding of a former fraternity brother named Tom Gregory in Chapel Hill. Tom was the son of two physicians, and his bride-to-be, a waifish brunette named Claire Devane, had a father who owned 56 Bojangles restaurants, fast food places specializing in fried chicken and biscuits. The business might not have had the elite ring associated with investment banking, but it minted money, and as a wedding gift, Claire's father had already given the couple a mini mansion, along with a Mercedes convertible. The wedding was, of course, a black tie affair. I had just started work at the Peters Group and had yet to receive my first paycheck. It went without saying that I was usually broke. While I had enough money to rent a tuxedo, I had to crash at another fraternity brother's place. His name was Liam Robertson, and he was about to start law school at UNC. Though he was also from Charlotte, we'd never been particularly close. He was the kind of guy who took delight in abusing the pledges and fed jello shots with Everclear to freshman girls. But Alpha Gamma Rose stick together. To that point, I'd worn a tuxedo only once in my life. I'd rented a navy blue tuxedo for my senior prom in high school, and the photo of me and my prom date graced the mantle of the fireplace at my parents' house until I married. That tuxedo, however, had a clip-on bow tie, while the tuxedo I'd rented for the wedding had one that I actually had to tie. Unfortunately, Liam Robertson had no more idea of how to tie the thing than I did, and as our departure time drew near, I'd already made half a dozen failed attempts. It was at that point that the front door to Liam's house flew open and Emily walked in. I'd seen her before, but had never been introduced. She and Liam had grown up in the same neighborhood and were supposedly just friends. Nonetheless, she was going to the wedding as Liam's date, so she can put in a good word for me in case I meet someone. As soon as I saw her, I did a double take. It wasn't the Emily I'd seen in Liam's company before, the bohemian with long skirts and Birkenstocks, usually sans makeup. Instead, the woman who stood before me was sheathed in a cocktail dress with a plunging neckline and high-heeled black pumps, an elegant look accentuated by tasteful diamond studs in both ears. The mascara she wore called attention to her striking eye color, and her lips, accentuated with red lipstick, were full and rich. Her hair fell in rippling waves well past her shoulders. "Hey, Emily," I heard Liam shout. "Russ needs help getting dressed."
"Nice to see you too, Liam," she said sardonically. "And yes, thank you, I appreciate the compliment."
"You look great, by the way," Liam added.
"Too late," she muttered under her breath as she glided toward me. "He's always been clueless," she observed, almost to herself. "I take it you're Russ?"
I nodded, trying not to ogle.
"I'm Emily," she said. "Technically, I'm Liam's date, but not really. He's more like a self-absorbed younger brother to me."
"I heard that," Liam shouted.
"Of course you did, but only because I was talking about you."
Their easy familiarity made me feel like a bystander, despite the fact that our faces were now only inches apart. "What have we got here?" she said, wrestling the bow tie free before draping it around my neck again. I noticed that she was only a little bit shorter than I and was wearing a heady floral scent. "I appreciate this," I said. "How do you know how to do this?"
"I had to help my dad when I was growing up," she said. "He never quite got the hang of it either. It always ended up crooked."
She tugged and adjusted the bow tie, her long fingers doing secret things out of eyesight. Our faces were so close it made me feel as though I was about to kiss her, and I thought again how beautiful she was. My eyes were drawn to her lips, then to the line of her neck. Her dress was cut low in the front, revealing a tiny lace bow at the front of her bra.
"Like what you see?" she teased.
I felt myself flush as I hastened to stare straight ahead, like a cadet at the Citadel. She smiled.
"Men," she said. "You're all the same."
I continued to stand at attention, silent as she finished. Then with a gentle tap to my chest with both hands and a wink, she went on.
"But since you're kind of cute, I'll forgive you."
When I pulled into Emily's driveway the following morning, I immediately spotted her loading a small cooler into her SUV. Getting out of the car, London scampered toward her and gave her a hug.
"Where's Bodie?"
I heard my daughter ask.
"He's in his room," Emily said. "He's picking a couple of movies to watch on the way. Do you want to go up and help him?"
"Yes, ma'am," London said, racing toward the front door before vanishing inside. Emily watched her go before turning toward me. She was dressed in shorts and a sleeveless top, and she'd tamed her hair into a ponytail. Despite the casual mom-at-the-park wardrobe, she seemed to glow with health and vitality. I couldn't stop staring at her thick hair and unblemished skin.
"Ma'am?"
she asked, referring to London when I was close. "She's very polite," I said, hoping my scrutiny wasn't too obvious.
"I like it," she said. "I've tried that with Bodie, but it's never seemed to take."
With the kids in the house, she seemed as youthful as the girl I once knew, giving rise to an internally disorienting sense of time warp. "It should be fun today," I commented. "London's been excited about it."
"Bodie, too," she said. "He wants London to ride with us."
"That's fine," I said. "I can follow."
"You'll ride with us too, Dingbat. There's no reason for both of us to have to drive, and there's no way I want to be trapped with those two without assistance. Besides, it'll take us 2 hours to get there, and this baby," she said, nodding at the SUV, "can play DVDs for the kids."
Her playful ribbing transported me back to the first time I'd ever spoken to her, and how nervous I'd been. "You want me to drive?" I offered.
"Unless you'd rather be in charge of the snacks. Of course, that means bending and twisting and unwrapping food every few minutes."
I remembered my dad's comment about family trips.
"No, I'm good," I said. "It's probably better if I drive."
Before we had even left the neighborhood, Bodie asked if they could watch Madagascar 3.
"Let's wait until we get on the highway," Emily said over her shoulder.
"Can I have a snack?" Bodie asked.
"You just had breakfast."
"But I'm hungry."
"What do you want to eat?"
"Goldfish," he demanded. Vivian had never allowed that particular treat into our home, but it was a staple of my own childhood.
"What's a goldfish?" London asked.
"It's a cheesy cracker shaped like a fish," Emily said. "It's really good."
"Can I have one, Daddy?"
My eyes flicked to the rearview mirror, and I wondered what London was thinking about the fact that I was up front with Emily and not her mom, or whether it mattered to her at all. "Of course you can." The drive to the zoo passed quickly. In the back seat, the kids were happily engrossed in the movie, but since they were within earshot, we didn't mention Vivian or David. Nor did Emily and I touch on our shared past. Instead, I told her what I'd been doing at work, and she talked about her paintings, and the fact that she had a show coming up in mid-November, which meant she'd be busier than usual until then. We also caught up on our respective families, the conversation and laughter flowing easily, as though we'd never lost contact with each other. Yet despite our familiarity, the outing still felt new and a little strange. It wasn't a date, but it wasn't something I could have envisioned even a month ago. I was on a road trip with Emily, kids in tow, and though I initially expected to feel a vague sense of guilt, I didn't. Instead, I found myself glancing at her in quiet moments and wondering how David could have been so stupid. And of course, why I'd been so stupid so long ago. "They're going to be exhausted," Emily predicted, shortly after we arrived at the zoo. Since we parked, they'd raced each other from the parking lot to the ticket booth, and once inside to the water fountain and back, then ricocheted back to the gift shop. London, I was proud to note, must have inherited some of those track and field genes because to my eyes they ran neck and neck. London and Bodhi were studying the gift shop racks as we ambled toward them. I'm already exhausted just watching them.
Did you get your run in this morning?
Just a short one, 4 miles or so. Better than me. Hoofing it around here will be my exercise for the day. How do you stay so fit?
Pole dancing, she said.
At my startled expression, she laughed.
You'd probably like that, wouldn't you?
She nudged my shoulder.
I'm kidding, you dork. But you should have seen your expression. It was priceless.
I do try to make it to the gym a few times a week, but mainly, I was blessed with good genes and I watch what I eat. It's easier than having to exercise all the time.
For you, maybe. I like eating.
London skipped toward me as we entered the shop.
Daddy, look, butterfly wings,
she cried, holding up a pair of lacy, semi-translucent wings, large enough for her to wear.
Very pretty, I said.
Can we get them, in case I get to be the butterfly at the dance?
For Miss Hamshaw, with the kids who didn't make the cut for the competition. The performance in which London was supposed to be a tree. I don't know, sweetie, I said.
Please, they're so pretty. And even if I'm not the butterfly, I can wear them today and make the animals happy. And I can show them to Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles when I get home.
I wasn't so sure about that, but I checked the price, relieved that they weren't exorbitant. You really want to wear these today?
Yes,
she pleaded, bouncing up and down.
And Bodhi wants the dragonfly wings.
I felt Emily's gaze on me and I turned toward her.
It might make them easier to spot if they run off, she pointed out.
All right, I said, but just the wings, okay?
And only if you put on sunscreen, Emily added.
Unlike me, she'd remembered to bring some. Oops. After paying, I helped London slip the wings on. Emily did the same with Bodhi. Spreading enough lotion on their skin to enable them to slither through tiny pipes, we watched as they ran off again, with their arms outstretched. The zoo was divided into two major areas, North America and Africa. We visited North America first, wandering through various exhibits and marveling at everything from harbor seals and peregrine falcons to alligators, muskrats, beavers, a cougar, and even a black bear. In each case, the kids reached the exhibit before we did, and by the time Emily and I arrived, they were usually anxious to move on. Fortunately, the crowds were light despite the glorious weather. The temperature was mild, and for the first time in months, the humidity didn't feel oppressive, which didn't, however, stop the kids from asking for popsicles and sodas. Whatever happened to Liam? I asked Emily. I haven't heard from him in 10 years. Last I heard, he was practicing law in Asheville and he was already on his second marriage.
He's still practicing law, she said, but his second marriage didn't last either.
She was a cocktail waitress too, right? When they met?
He has a type, she said with a smile. No question about it.
When was the last time you heard from him?
Maybe 7 or 8 months ago. He heard I was getting divorced and he asked me out.
He wasn't one of the nice guys you never called a second time.
Liam?
Oh, God, no.
We'd known each other growing up, but you know. He's always been a little too into himself for my taste. And in college, we hung out more out of habit than actual friendship. And by habit, I mean he came on to me at least once a semester, usually when he was drinking.
I always wondered why you tolerated him, I mused.
Because my parents were friends with his parents and lived across the street from each other. My dad thought he had his act together, but my mom saw right through him all along, thank God. The point is, it had more to do with the fact that he was always there. On campus, at home. Back then, I hadn't developed the ability to just cut people off, even if they were jerks.
If it wasn't for him, though, we'd never have met. She smiled wistfully.
Do you remember when you asked me to dance at the wedding?
I do, I said. It had taken more than an hour for me to work up the courage, even though Liam had by then zeroed in on a woman who would later become wife number one.
You were afraid of me, she said with a knowing grin.
I was acutely aware of how close she was. Up ahead, London and Bodhi were walking beside each other as well, and I flashed on the book I read nightly to London. The four of us walking two by two, because no one should have to walk alone. I wasn't afraid, I clarified. I was embarrassed because you'd caught me ogling when you helped me with my bow tie.
Oh, stop. I was flattered and you know it. We've been over this before. I'd asked Liam about you, remember? He said that you were too nerdy for me and not handsome enough,
and not rich enough. Then he hit on me again. I laughed. It's coming back to me.
Do you stay in touch with friends from college?
She squinted as if trying to recall faces.
We used to see your buddies pretty regularly when we were together.
Not really, I said. Once I got married and London came along, I sort of lost track of most of them. You?
I have a few friends from college and a handful that I knew growing up. We still talk and get together, but probably not as much as we should. Like it did with you, life just got busy.
I noticed the lightest spray of freckles across her cheeks and nose, so faint as to be invisible in anything but perfectly angled autumn sunlight. I didn't recall her having those 15 years ago. They were another surprising feature of this once familiar Emily. For a moment I wondered what Vivian would think if she saw Emily and me together right now. Suddenly the whole situation struck me as surreal. Me with Emily at the zoo with the kids, Vivian in Spannerman's arms somewhere else. How had things come to this? And where had my life taken this unforeseen U-turn? Emily's hand on my arm startled me out of my reverie.
You okay? She studied me. You went away there for a second.
Yeah, sorry. I tried for a smile. Sometimes it just hits me at random moments, how odd and inexplicable it all is, I mean. She was silent for a moment, letting her hand fall away.
It's going to be that way for a while, she said, her tone soft. But if you can, try to let whatever comes, come. And whatever stays, stay. And whatever goes, just let it go.
That's beyond me right now.
Right now being the operative words. You'll get there.
A dull ache of missing Vivian stirred within me then. But it didn't linger. It was a rabbit punch, without the strength of an uppercut. And I understood that it was due to Emily. Given the choice, I realized that it was better to spend the day with a fun and compassionate friend than a wife who seemed to despise me.
It's been a long time since I did something like this, Emily reflected.
When I looked at her inquiringly, she continued.
Hang out with a friend of the opposite sex, I mean. It was before David, that's all I know.
It might have even been before you and I were together.
Why is that?
Because we were married.
But I know other married people who have friends of the opposite sex.
I'm not saying that it can't happen, I conceded. It's just that it can get tricky, and I think most people know that. Human nature being what it is, and given how hard marriage is, the last thing any spouse needs is an attractive alternative. It can make the other party look bad. She made a wry face.
Is that what I'm doing? She asked.
No.
Don't answer.
That was inappropriate. She smoothed some stray hairs into her ponytail.
It's not my intent to make anything worse between you and Vivian.
I know that, I said. Then again, I'm not sure you could make it any worse. For all I know, she's off in Paris with the guy right now.
You don't know?
The only time we spoke this week was when she told me she wanted to see London 2 of the next 3 weekends, including her birthday weekend, then yelled at me for allowing London to miss dance class. She also said it would be hard to reach her, whatever that means, and that I should sleep at Marge's or my parents when she's in town because she wants the house. Oh, and that she's sick of my crap. Emily winced. It wasn't my favorite phone call, I admitted.
But you know she shouldn't get to see London every single weekend, nor should you have to leave the house.
She says she wants to make it easier for London.
It sounds to me like she just wants what she wants.
That too, I said. But at the same time I can see her point. It would be disruptive for London to have to stay in a hotel when her mom's in town.
Her life has already been disrupted, Emily pointed out. Why can't she just sleep in the guest room?
She thinks that might confuse London.
So suggest that she go to bed after London is asleep and then set an alarm so she's awake before London. When you're together, just be cordial to one another. I know it's hard when emotions are high, but it's not impossible. And it's better than you getting kicked out of your own house every time she comes to visit. That's just wrong, and you don't deserve to be treated that way.
You're right, I acknowledged. But I was already dreading the argument that would inevitably ensue. More than anyone, Vivian knew how to hurt me when she didn't get her way.
When we met in the coffee shop that first time, I told you that I'd seen you dropping off London, remember?
I remember.
What I didn't say is that I watched you for a while. I saw the way you are with her, the way she hugged you and told you she loved you. It's obvious to everyone that you are the apple of that girl's eye.
Inexplicably, I felt myself blush with pleasure. Well, I'm pretty much the only parent she has right now.
It's more than that, Russ, she interrupted.
For little girls, their first love should always be their dad. But that isn't always the case. When I saw you two saying goodbye that day, I was struck by how loving and close you seemed. Then I recognized you and I just knew I had to say hello. So I followed you.
Come on. Scout's honor, Emily said, making the Boy Scout sign.
You know me. I live by my instincts. Artist, remember?
I laughed. Yeah, I said, meeting her determined gaze and feeling flattered, although for what reason I wasn't sure.
I'm glad you did. I don't know what kind of shape I'd be in right now if you hadn't. You've been a big help to me. Yep, that's what I do, she said with a playful, aw shucks grin. You know what's strange?
What's that?
I don't have any memories of what you were like when you were angry. I can't even recall any serious fights between us. So tell me, do you get angry?
Of course.
And I can be scary, she warned.
I don't believe you.
Then don't ever test it. I'm like a grizzly bear and jackal and great white shark all rolled into one. She gestured at our surroundings. I thought animal metaphors would be appropriate, since we're here at the zoo, I mean.
After viewing the animals of North America and the aviary, the four of us had lunch. Despite a steady stream of snacking during the previous 4 hours, Bodhi managed to finish a plate of chicken nuggets and fries, along with a chocolate milkshake. London consumed about a third as much, but for her that was a lot. Neither Emily nor I were hungry, both of us opting for a bottle of water.
Can we go see the lions now?
Bodhi asked.
Not until we put on more sunscreen, Emily answered, and the kids popped out of their seats. Again, Emily slathered them up.
You're very good at remembering that. I forget every time.
You never saw David's extended family. They lived in the outback, like the outback outback, and you could have measured the depth of their wrinkles with a wooden ruler. A lot of people here get too much sun, but seeing those relatives at our wedding really made an impression on me. I barely leave the house without sunscreen these days.
That's why you have the skin of a 20-year-old.
Ah, nice try, but a lovely thought nonetheless.
I was tempted to explain that I was sincere, but opted instead to start gathering our food trays.
Who's ready to head to Africa? I asked.
I admit that I found the Africa part of the zoo more to my liking. Growing up, I'd seen alligators in the Cape Fear River, muskrats and beavers, all sorts of birds, including that majestic bald eagle, and even a bear. When I was a kid in Charlotte across the street from my elementary school, a bear was spotted crossing the road and eventually ended up in the branches of an oak tree. It was a juvenile bear, and while the sighting was definitely uncommon, everyone knew that bears weren't really that rare in North Carolina. The largest black bear on record, in fact, was killed in Craven County. The point is, the animals of North America that we'd seen earlier didn't strike me as terribly exotic. Never once, however, had I spotted a zebra or giraffe or a chimpanzee. I'd never come face to face with baboons or elephants either. Maybe I'd seen them at the circus. My family went to the circus every year when it was in town. But seeing the animals in a setting that was somewhat reminiscent of the wilds of Africa was enough to make even the kids stop and stare for a while. Handing London my phone, she took more than 100 photos, which added to her excitement. Because we took our time, we didn't finish up at the zoo until late afternoon. By the time we trekked back to the car, the kids were trailing behind us.
It's like the tortoise and the hare, I said to Emily. Except the hares back there probably ran 3 times as fast as we walked.
Well, at least they'll sleep well.
I just hope that Bodhi doesn't fall asleep in the car. If he naps for 2 hours, he'll be awake until midnight.
I didn't think about that, I said, suddenly concerned about London's schedule as well. Kind of like remembering to bring sunscreen or bringing snacks for the trip. Obviously, I'm a work in progress when it comes to child rearing on my own.
We're all works in progress, she said. It's the definition of being a parent.
You seem to know what you're doing.
Sometimes, she said. Not always. This week when Bodhi was sick, I couldn't decide whether to baby him or treat his cold like an everyday occurrence.
I know how my parents would have reacted, I said, unless I was bleeding profusely or had broken bones protruding from my skin or a fever high enough to fry my brain, they would have shrugged and told me to tough it out.
And yet you turned out just fine. Which means that maybe I was too soft on Bodhi. Maybe he'll learn to like being sick because it gets him special treatment.
Why is it so hard to be a really good parent?
You don't have to be a really good parent, she said. All you have to do is be good enough.
As I pondered her words, I realized why my parents and Marge had liked Emily so much.
like them. Emily was wise. Chapter 19. Finding My Own Way. It was the wedding in Chapel Hill that cemented my resolve to see Emily again. By the time the cake had been cut and the bouquet had been tossed, Emily and I had danced